Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, 4 months after the report on Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election, former special counsel Robert Mueller testifies before Congress. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Ahead of his appearance before the House of Representatives Judiciary and Intelligence Committees on July 24, Robert Mueller, a former FBI director, had warned that he'd not stray beyond his 448-page report submitted to Attorney General William Barr in March. Mueller largely stuck to his word, frustrating both Democrats and Republicans in the process. Nonetheless, hearing directly from the man who led the investigation into Russia's interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election and any coordination with the Trump campaign helped to dispel any misconceptions previously articulated by Attorney General William Barr. Mr. Mueller concluded unequivocally that the Russian government interfered in the 2016 election in a sweeping and systematic fashion. Second, even though the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired with the Russian government in its election interference activities, it did not address collusion, which is not even a legal term, but did document dozens of contacts between Trump campaign officials and Russians. However, based on Justice Department policy, Mr. Mueller did not draw a conclusion as to whether Trump obstructed justice. The special counsel stated that while the report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. Toward the end of his opening statement, Robert Mueller made this haunting and ominous conclusion.
Over the course of my career, I have seen a number of challenges to our democracy. The Russian government's effort to interfere in our election is among the most serious. And as I said on May 29th, this deserves the attention of every American.
Former Special Counsel Robert Mueller. In his opening statement, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Democratic Congressman Jerry Nadler of New York, summarized the main findings of Mr. Mueller's report.
In volume one, you find that the Russian government attacked our 2016 elections, quote, in a sweeping and systematic fashion, and that the attacks were designed to benefit the Trump campaign. Volume two walks us through 10 separate incidents of possible obstruction of justice, where, in your words, President Trump attempted to exert undue influence over your investigation. The president's behavior included, and I quote from your report, quote, public attacks on the investigation, non-public efforts to control it, and efforts in both public and private to encourage witnesses not to cooperate, close quote.
Chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Democratic Congressman Jerry Nadler. After the hearings, Mr. Trump tweeted that he has, quote, gone through a 3-year vicious witch hunt perpetrated by the lamestream media in collusion with the crooked and Democrat Party, unquote. Meantime, Mr. Mueller explicitly rejected the characterization of his investigation as a so-called witch hunt. He praised the integrity and impartiality of his investigators. The Mueller investigation has resulted in indictments or guilty pleas from 34 people and 3 companies, including 6 former Trump advisors. Well, joining us to discuss the politics and substance of Robert Mueller's testimony are Alan Lichtman. He's a distinguished professor of history at American University and author of the recently published book, The Case for Impeachment, and Mark Simakovsky. He's a senior fellow in the Eurasia Center at the Atlantic Council. That's a policy group based here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's begin with you, Alan Lichtman. What is your reaction to Mueller's long-awaited testimony, both the tone, optics, and substance? Why was it important to hear from him directly?
It was critical to hear from him directly because so few Americans, 3% or less, actually read the very damning Mueller report. And of course, Mueller was criticized for not being more forceful, for even being stumbling at times. But in my view, that simply added to his credibility. This was clearly not someone out to get the president. After all, he's a lifelong Republican. This was not run by a Democrat. And I think Mueller bent over backwards to be fair to President Trump and not to engage in this so-called witch hunt. And as your quotations indicated, Mueller found 10 instances of obstruction of justice. And, you know, if you listen to the apologists for Donald Trump, they say, well, he can do really what he wants in his authority as commander-in-chief. I think that's wrong. You can't do it for a corrupt purpose. But leave that aside. There are plenty of things he did that had nothing to do with that, like asking his White House counsel Don McGahn to lie, to create a false record about him directing McGahn to fire Mueller, or creating a false record of the notorious meeting between Russian operatives and Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort at Trump Tower. In addition, as you've indicated, he did not clear the president of collusion, and he did find, not only did the president welcome Russian help and have his team have more than 100 contacts with the Russians, Mueller said something very important that was missed in his testimony, that in using the stolen emails that were obtained through criminal activity by the Russians, the president was actually bolstering illegal activity. If this isn't enough to start an impeachment investigation, I don't know what possibly could be.
Let me turn to Mark Simakovsky for your take on the importance of Mueller's long-awaited testimony and what you heard.
You know, aside from the political circus that enveloped this testimony, both sides, I think, were a bit disappointed by Mueller's testimony, except for the president. But I think what's important, and maybe what was missing from Mueller's emphasis and focus, because many of the questions were about the president, was about Russia's role. And what was Russia's role? And it was a role that was clearly defined and directed from the Kremlin to attack and undermine the United States democracy and U.S. interests. And this report, at 400 pages, had very specific evidence to back up that accusation, also very specific indictments against Russian officials and Russian intelligence service agents that directed and carried out these indictments. And of course, additionally, U.S. citizens that were involved in this essentially conspiracy to engage in a way that would take information from the Russian Federation and improve Donald Trump's chances for becoming the president of the United States. And Mr. Mueller, I think, opened and closed his remarks highlighting the threat that Russia places. But of course, the wider concern is because anything that has to do with Russia is labeled by the president and his allies as a hoax, as a political circus, that actually is incorrect, because there is clear evidence and clear focus and an investigation that has highlighted Russia's role and Russia's continuous nefarious activity is happening today at home. Russia will meddle in the next election here in 2020. And Russia's actions abroad, I think, continue to showcase and should showcase the American people that we need to take this threat seriously.
Let me quickly follow up on that, because I agree with everything that Mark said. But it is a tragedy that we're not getting any presidential leadership on this.
Well, this was the question I was going to ask you, Alan, because just as Mark underscored, are 17 intelligence agencies determined that Russia interfered in the election? They helped leak emails through WikiLeaks and undermined the chances of Hillary Clinton and bolstered those of Trump. And Mr. Trump himself still has to yet acknowledge this important fact, which is well documented.
I thought it was one of the most humiliating and tragic moments in U.S. history, when on the world stage, with everybody watching, the president of the United States believed the denials of Vladimir Putin, a murderous dictatorial thug who does not have America's best interests at heart, quite the contrary, above, as you say, the findings of 17 intelligence agencies, saying, you know, Mr. Putin denied it, and I see no reason why they would have meddled. It is an equal tragedy for Mitch McConnell, Donald Trump's person in the United States Senate, the Republican leader, to block every single measure designed to protect our elections in 2020 from further manipulation, including something as simple as saying, if your campaign is contacted by an adversarial foreign power, you should do what the Trump campaign never did and inform the FBI.
That's very puzzling to me, Mark Makovsky. Why Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, would still, after listening to Mueller's testimony, reading the report, understanding the findings of 17 U.S. intelligence agencies, why would he continue to block legislation that would safeguard our elections, even as Mr. Mueller stated in his testimony that the Russians are at it as we speak? Actually, it makes one wonder, if one didn't know better, that perhaps Mr. McConnell somehow unconsciously wants to welcome interference again because it seems to benefit his party.
You know, I think this is one of the most significant casualties of the Mueller investigation, is that President Trump has created equivalency between anything or anyone that sees Russia as a threat as somehow being a part of the political witch hunt against him. And so there has been an inability of many Republicans to be able to divide the investigation of Mueller and the existing threat that Russia places on our democracy and our security. Now, some action has been taken by the Senate and by the Congress and even by people within the Trump administration to protect U.S. interests in relation to Russia. We have sanctions that were in place 2017 called the CATSA sanctions that undermine the ability of the Trump administration and President Trump himself. Now we look back, that was willing to lift sanctions against Russia. There are measures that have been taken to deter Russia in Europe. But you're right, not enough has been done. And that's partly exactly because of what Alan has said. It takes presidential leadership to showcase to the bureaucracy and to Congress that irrespective of the Russian investigation, there are steps that the United States needs to take to counter Russia. That signal is lacking because of fear of President Trump within his own party.
And he seems to think that acknowledging it somehow undermines his own legitimacy.
Absolutely.
As president.
Absolutely.
Right, Alan?
That is certainly correct. He's very sensitive about the fact that he lost the popular vote by almost 3 million votes. So he thinks he's on shaky grounds for legitimacy anyway, which is why he created the fantasy that 3 to 5 million illegal voters somehow showed up on Election Day, all voted for Hillary Clinton, gave her the popular vote margin, then just as miraculously disappeared. You have to understand about this president. He has no concept of truth. He simply makes things up that he thinks serve his purposes.
And he even said that notwithstanding the norm and to what extent it's actually a law that one cannot accept dirt or damaging information on one's political adversary from a foreign adversary.
Or any foreign government.
Or any foreign government. That's a crime.
Absolutely, that's a crime. And the campaign finance laws are not equivocal. You cannot accept anything of value from a foreign entity or their agents. One area I thought, quite frankly, Mueller bent over backwards to help Donald Trump is he certainly could have indicted the president's son, Don Jr., president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort for soliciting and trying to accept dirt on Hillary Clinton in that infamous June 2016 Trump Tower meeting that Donald Trump Jr. blatantly, with the help of the president, lied about. Certainly, opposition research, dirt on your opponent, is of tremendous value, probably much more valuable than any cash contributions the Russians could have made. And somehow Mueller let them all off the hook, saying, well, maybe they didn't know. Of course, Paul Manafort had to know. He'd been involved in numerous campaigns. And I believe Don Jr. certainly knew because he blatantly lied about the meeting and covered it up.
Well, why do you think he didn't then, Mr. Mueller? He didn't indict.
I think time and again, Mueller bent over backwards not to indict people involved in the Trump campaign, or even to say, I believe there is substantial, credible evidence that Trump committed obstruction of justice. He could have said that even if he didn't indict Trump. I think absolutely 180 degrees opposite of the Trump narrative. This was a special counsel, remember, a lifelong Republican who went out of his way not to be aggressive. Compare the Mueller report to the Ken Starr report against Bill Clinton, who was involved in alleged crimes vastly less serious than undermining our democracy, covering up a consensual affair. That was an absolutely damning, aggressive report that recommended numerous articles of impeachment against Bill Clinton. Mueller went in absolutely the opposite direction, and I think missed a real chance to do a service to our democracy.
And then, of course, there's obstruction of justice, on which Mueller didn't really make a ruling one way or the other. He said that it was because of the Office of Legal Counsel policy not being able to indict a sitting president, Mark Simakovsky, that he was somehow hamstrung from doing so or even making that determination.
Yeah, I think Mueller demurred on a number of topics that he could have taken a much more bold and risky approach, even though he perhaps did not have the full ability to indict. I think in many ways he took a very conservative approach that he knew would be scrutinized to a T by the administration. And as Alan said, I think he missed an opportunity with the facts laid out before him to perhaps not indict some of these officials, but lay out a more obvious case also of obstruction, but also of interference in undermining our democracy by welcoming essentially foreign assistance.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. Our guests are Alan Lichtman, he's Distinguished Professor of History at American University, and Mark Simakovsky, from whom you just heard. He's Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center. We're discussing the politics and substance of former Special Counsel Robert Mueller's testimony before two congressional committees about his report into Russia's interference in the 2016 U.S. election. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal listener from Russia, Kirill Resnik. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Alan Lichtman, to now talk about the implications, ramifications now of the testimony. What's next? The Democrats who are in charge in the House of Representatives, many now are calling for an impeachment inquiry, more and more people. The leadership, Nancy Pelosi, is still wary. She wants to have the so-called public on board. What do you think should happen? Many are worried that if an impeachment inquiry and then proceedings take place, the Senate will simply not convict Mr. Trump and he will perceive that as a victory. So that could hurt Democrats in the 2020 election. Others say it must be done to compel more witnesses to really get the story out of what really went on, potential crimes and misbehavior by the president himself even. And for our democracy's integrity, we need to have this information.
We've seen something extraordinary happen. A majority of Democrats have now defied their Speaker of the House and called for an impeachment inquiry, which is an investigation, not a final impeachment. Nancy Pelosi, in being a roadblock to such an inquiry, has hit the trifecta. She is wrong morally, constitutionally, and politically. The only way to hold this president to account is not with scattered investigations, subpoenas, contempt citations. That plays right into his hands, but to strike at his brand and his power, which only an impeachment investigation can do constitutionally. Nancy Pelosi has said that Donald Trump is such a criminal, he belongs in jail. Well, the constitutional remedy, and the only one, is impeachment. It's congressional malpractice not to do it. Finally, Nancy Pelosi is wrong politically, although I don't think that should be determinative. She thinks the Republicans got hurt by the impeachment of Bill Clinton. Quite the opposite. Sure, they lost a few seats in the House, but what did they gain? The presidency of the United States in 2000 by 537 votes in Florida, when George W. Bush, the Republican, was campaigning on restoring integrity and honesty to the White House.
So let me get your take on that, Mark Simakovsky. If you think it would be wise, both politically and morally, to go forward with an impeachment inquiry, especially because the Trump administration seems to be resisting all calls for subpoenas, documents. They're defying these calls, which seems to me almost unprecedented, and that an impeachment inquiry at least would compel them to come forward so some accountability can be determined.
You know, I think what the Mueller investigation ultimately did was it passed the buck to the Congress to make a decision based on the facts that were there, and the Mueller report would be a component of those facts. I think that there remains soil to be tilled on pursuing impeachment. I think, unfortunately, much of that decision will be driven by politics because of the speaker's hesitancy and her concern that many Americans are, quote, over this investigation. But clearly, what Mr. Mueller laid out was that there were efforts to obstruct the investigation. There were clear links with a foreign entity to undermine our election. And then there are also a number of very strange financial dealings and a history that President Trump has had with the Russian Federation. I think all of those three areas are worth continuing in an investigation. And if they lead to impeachment proceedings, then that is where things need to proceed.
We make a quick comment on that. In the latest poll, 37% of Americans favored impeachment proceedings. That's double the amount that favored such proceedings for Richard Nixon at the beginning of the investigation. By the completion of the investigation, 54% favored actual impeachment. So you're putting the cart before the horse when you say we have to have the public behind us. It's the investigation and the public hearings that move the public. And there's a big elephant in the room that no one has talked about that certainly merits an impeachment investigation. Under a judge's order, the Southern District of New York just released all of its evidence about two felonies for violating the campaign finance laws that Michael Cohen went to jail for, paying hush money to two women who claimed to have affairs with Donald Trump, and then not reporting it and covering up. Well, that evidence showed that this process, for which Michael Cohen went to jail, at least in part, was directed by Donald Trump. And those witnesses do not work for the government, and Trump can't block people like David Pecker, the head of the National Enquirer, from testifying.
And as we close, concluding words from you, Alan, with respect to impeachment, whether or not this should go forward, or should Mr. Trump's fate be decided through the 2020 election?
You know, we tend to have a misperception of impeachment as this catastrophic event. That's wrong. The framers put impeachment into the Constitution advisedly as an orderly, constitutional, and peaceful process for dealing with a rogue leader, as opposed to the way they dealt with such leaders in the 18th century by assassination or revolution. And in fact, the two impeachments and the near impeachment and resignation of Richard Nixon were actually beneficial, not harmful, to the country.
Well, the last word to you, Mark Simakovsky, because of course that argument is made that, oh, impeachment would tear the country apart. And of course, Alan's just making the opposite argument.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the examples also of an impeachment proceeding is a deterrent for future behavior. If a president believes that he has the ability to conduct behavior without any checks and balances, then what's to make the United States any different from any dictatorship or authoritarian regime? If the evidence again leads in one of our branches of government to allow that branch of government, which is again elected by the people of the United States, to investigate a sitting president for conduct unbecoming of a president, then it should proceed. And that should not simply be done based on whether it's popular or not popular, or that it would somehow impact or undermine the next election. Members of Congress have a role and responsibility to move forward. There's still a responsibility, a wider responsibility than the Mueller report. And again, I think you see it in President Trump trying to end this investigation. And I think that showcases why Congress has such a critical role to play.
I'll leave you with one last chilling thought. Donald Trump has said explicitly that he believes, quite falsely, that the Constitution lets him do whatever I want. That is a direct quote. If that is let to stand, then God help our democracy.
And then I would just say finally, in Mr. Trump's favor, if he is as innocent as he says he is, then what does he really have to be afraid of for all the evidence to be laid out for the American public?
That's right. Benjamin Franklin said, you know, if you're not guilty, then you will be cleared in this process.
Exactly. On that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Alan Lichtman. He's Distinguished Professor of History at American University, and Mark Simakovsky, Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guests. Our engineer was Joe Gill. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.
gray shirt, now red.